Well, good morning and welcome to Hoboken Grace. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Chris. I'm the lead pastor here at Hoboken Grace, and we are really excited to have you. Right now, we are in the midst of a series called Win, or a conversation called Win. And for the past couple weeks, what we've been doing is looking at how God, as He steps into our lives, He calls us to the mindset of victory. How He's not just, He's not asking us to just settle for what is, but that He's calling us into the battles that this life brings to us. All these different battles that we engage on a day-to-day basis, the battle with jealousy, the battle with our temper, all these different battles in our lives that all of us are facing. If we're on a journey to love well. If you're on a journey to love well, you are going to engage and experience these battles, and God is stepping into our lives and calling us not just to engage the battle, but calling us to do so with the mindset of victory, that Jesus Christ gave His life so that we could begin to know victory in these places where for some of us, maybe we've begun to accept defeat. And we've been looking at this passage for the past couple weeks. It's found in Ephesians chapter 6, where it says, "A final word, be strong in the Lord and in His mighty power." He's calling us to strength and to courage. He says, "Be strong in the Lord and in His mighty power. Put on all of God's armor so that you will be able to stand firm." We talked about how he's calling us to hold the victory that we've been given, to stand firm in victory against all strategies of the devil, for we are not fighting against flesh and blood enemies, but against evil rulers and authorities in the unseen world, against mighty powers in this dark world, and against evil spirits in the heavenly places. He says, listen, I want for you to, in strength, to stand firm. And He's calling us to this mindset of victory. He's calling us to begin to win in these battles where for many of us, we've accepted defeat. But He doesn't just call us to do that. He then begins to equip us to do that. And this is one of the great things about God. As God steps into our lives, He doesn't just come to us and say, hey, listen, this should be different. He comes into our lives and says, listen, this can be better, and let me show you how to get there. He's constantly leading and guiding and directing and instructing us in how to be able to get to where He died to make possible. And the same thing is happening in this passage. He doesn't just come and say, hey, be strong. You guys need to stand firm. And then that's it. No, He comes and says, you need to be strong and stand firm. And this is how you do that. He says, therefore, put on every piece of God's armor so you'll be able to resist the enemy in the time of evil. Then after the battle, you will be standing firm. He says, after the battle, you're going to have victory. You're going to stand firm. He says, stand your ground, putting on the belt of truth. And last week, we looked at the belt of truth. We talked about how we have to submit to God's truth in our lives, that we don't get to pick and choose. We're not God. We're not the judge. We're not the authority. We submit to His truth. He says, putting on the belt of truth and the body armor of God's righteousness. And this is where we want to go today. We want to take that next step. Okay, we've looked at truth. Now what's next? And He says, and then put on the body armor of God's righteousness. Now other translations translate this word as the breastplate. In other words, this is what covers your chest. This is what covers your heart. He says, I want you to put on the belt of truth. And He says, and then to cover your heart, I want you to put on God's righteousness. I want you to put on the righteousness of God to cover your heart. Well, how in the world does God's righteousness cover our heart? One of the things that He's been walking through with Ephesians in this book, and if you haven't had a chance to be able to read through the book of Ephesians, I highly encourage you to go back and read through it. It's not a very long book, but it's an incredibly powerful book. And throughout the book, He's been calling them to places where they're accepting defeat. And He's been pointing out places where, listen, you guys are acting like this is okay, but it's destroying your life. And He's calling out to them the way in which the one who would destroy them is actually succeeding in destroying them. And one of the things that you need to understand about the one who wants to destroy you is that one of the first things that he wants to go after in your life is your heart. He wants to go after your heart. And he does that in two ways. It begins with tempting your heart away from God. And he steps into your life and he begins to tempt your heart away from God. He begins to distract your heart away from God. And remember, as we've been talking about in this series, he can't take the hill from you, so he has to deceive you into giving it up. So what he does is he comes into your life and he begins to lie to you about the hill. And he begins to tempt you away from the victory that Jesus has given you. And he begins to tempt you away from the one who loves you most. And he begins to turn your eyes to the things around you. And he comes and he says, whoa, this whole contentment thing, it's not really all that it's cracked up to be. Look what you could have. And he begins to tempt you with the valley. I don't even understand why you value that hill. That hill's not that great. Look at what's available over here, and look at what's available. God doesn't really know what love looks like. That's such an old-fashioned idea of love. Look at what love could look like, and he begins to tempt you away from the hill. He wants your heart to begin to be attached or directed towards the things that God said, no, that's going to destroy you. And so he begins to tempt your heart with greed. He begins to tempt your heart with lust. He begins to tempt your heart with pride. Because he wants for you to give up the hill. And he does it very subtly. We talked about this last year when we were working through our guardrail series, how our culture and the one who wants to destroy us, it loves to tempt us to the edge. It calls us to the edge. And so he steps into our lives and says, well, you're never going to sleep with them. It's just flirting. It's okay. And it tempts us to the edge. And he steps into our lives and he begins to tempt our heart to the edge. And the first part of his strategy is that he wants for us to give up the hill, for our hearts to become obsessed with something other than the one who loves us most. And then when we fall, remember we talked about this last year, it tempts us to the edge of the cliff, and then when we fall, it mocks us. When we fall, his strategy changes, and he begins to step into our lives. And the scriptures describe our enemy as the accuser. The scriptures describe our enemy as the accuser because what he does is he comes in those moments when we've fallen, when we've made that mistake, he comes into our lives and he begins to blast us with accusations. And he brings guilt with all that it has. And the second that we fall, he's the first one there to say, I told you you weren't going to make it. I told you you weren't going to win. How did you ever think that you were going to be able to make it? How did you ever think that God was going to love you? How would you ever think that God cares about you? Look at and he loves to be able to in those moments. He loves to be able to bring in half truths. And so he comes in and he says, "Look at what Jesus has done for you, and this is how you repay him." Look at everything that God's done for you, and this is your response to it. He comes in, and he begins to tempt our hearts away from God. And then the moment that we fall, he brings every accusation he can possibly bring into our lives to make sure that we never get up again. And there's nothing that he wants more than for you to take on the mindset of defeat. There's nothing that he wants more than for you to begin to believe that God's never going to forgive you. There's nothing that he wants more than for you to begin to believe that God's given up on you. There's nothing that he wants more than for you to believe that God doesn't want anything to do with you anymore. He tempts us away from the hill. And the second that we fall, He brings guilt and shame in every way possible to convince us to never get up again, to convince us that we could never hold the hill again. For some of you, that's your story this morning. You walked in here. You walked in here because your friend invited you, or you walked in here because you've been doing it your whole life and this church thing. But the reality is that you walked in here and you don't want to look at God, you don't want to talk to God, you don't want to actually think about God because you are convinced that God's done with you. You are convinced that you've gone too far. You're convinced you've done too much. I mean, after all, he gave you a second chance and you blew it. He gave you a third chance and you blew it. And the accuser stepping into your life and saying, how many chances do you need? And you're convinced. It's over. Which is why for some of us, we've just accepted defeat. It is what it is. I'm never going to be significant in God's story. I'm never going to matter. I'm never going to be able to have a great marriage. I'm never going to be able to actually be a good dad. I'm never going to be able to actually reach my coworkers. I'm never going to be able. You've accepted defeat. Because he got you down. And he's convinced you that you can't get back up. I remember when I first became a pastor, my dad and I were planting a church called Skyline. It's not too far west of here, about 15, 20 miles west of here. And I remember very shortly after stepping into that, and things were going really well, and I was really excited about what was happening, really excited about how God was using me and how God was working in our church. And then I blew it. And I remember thinking, it's over. God gave me a chance, and look at all that God was doing, and this is how I respond. Look at all that God's doing in our church, and this is what I do. And I remember I began to allow all of those lies to begin to fill my life. And I was just about to quit. I was just about to walk away. But yeah, because I was convinced God's never going to be able to use me. Look at how I continue to fail. God's never going to be able to use me. And it was one of the very rare times in my life where I believe that God actually gave me a dream. One of the very rare times, it only happened a couple times in my life, but I had a dream. And in my dream, I found myself lying face down in the mud, which was very representative of where I was in my life at that time and what was happening and my failure and my struggle. And I found myself lying face down, and I realized that God was behind me in the dream, and I could sense the fact that he was there, but I didn't want to turn around. I didn't want to look back. Because I knew that when I looked back that I was going to see the face of disappointment. Many of us know that face because we experienced that in our parents when we disappointed them. That face of just complete disappointment. How could you do this? How could this happen? How could you make that decision? As I sat there, I was so afraid of that face. I was so afraid of the disappointment that I had caused him. I was so afraid of the anger that was going to be on his face. I've done all this for you. Why can't you get it right? And I sat there, and I sat there. Because I didn't want to face him. Some of you, that's exactly where you are this morning. You're terrified to face him. Because you're afraid of how angry he's going to be, of how disappointed he's going to be. But finally, I decided I've got to turn around. And in my dream, I looked over my shoulder. And what I saw shocked me. Because I didn't see disappointment. And I didn't see anger. I also didn't see someone with a giant smile and arms open wide. When I turned around and I looked over my shoulder, I saw a face of determination. And in my dream, he was holding out a sword to me. And he said to me, "Get up and fight. Get up and fight. Get up and fight." And he began to show me the people in my life who needed me to win. And in that moment, God began to teach me a powerful lesson about this battle. He began to teach me something powerful that the scriptures bring to you and to me. And that is this. One of the things that Satan wants to do when he comes to you, when he's coming after your heart, one of the primary things that he wants to do is that he wants for you to become obsessed with you. And he wants you to be focused on what you want. And he wants that selfishness to pull you off that hill. And then he also wants that selfishness to keep you down. And so he wants for you to be obsessed with you when you're lying there. And for you to be obsessed with your mistake and your failure. And he wants for you to be thinking constantly about you. But in that moment when I turned around, what I realized is that God was trying to teach me, Chris, stop thinking about you. We have a mission to engage here. Stop being obsessed with you. It's time for you to begin to care about somebody else besides you. And there are people who need you to win. So get up and fight. It's time to get up and fight. He was calling me to take my eyes off myself. And this is how God's righteousness protects your heart. Because in that moment, when you're obsessed with yourself, you feel like you don't have the authority to get back up. You feel like you don't have the right to get back up. But what Jesus has done in your life is that he stepped into your life and taken all of your sin and all of your shame and all of your brokenness. And for those of you who haven't experienced this yet, it is available to you today. Jesus has stepped into your life and he's taken all of it. And he has said, if you will give me your shame and your brokenness, I will take that to that cross and I will give you my righteousness. So that in that moment when you fall down, in that moment, when you fail, you have the authority and the right to get back up. Why? Because I don't stand on my goodness, I stand on his. And I can get back up and begin to fight for the people around me, but when I'm obsessed with myself and I'm obsessed with my own goodness and what I'm doing, it keeps me in the mud. This is why I really struggle when people come to me and say, I need to do this for me. I need to win this battle for me. I need to win this fight for me. There is nothing in the message of Jesus Christ that says that. I challenge you to go to the scriptures and find me one place where God says, you need to do this for you. No. We're constantly called to live our lives in love. In other words, as Philippians says, considering others as more important than ourselves, serving others in everything that we do. What Jesus is saying is stop being obsessed with you and realize that the world around you needs you, so get up and fight. If you talk to people who have engaged in real battle, you know what they talk to you about? They don't talk to you about themselves. There's a consistent word that you hear when you talk to people who have engaged in real battle. You know what that word is? Brotherhood. Brotherhood. I fought for my brothers. We fought as brothers and sisters. We fought together. We fought for one another. What was it that got you through that? I fought for the people around me. I fought for the people who are fighting with me. What Jesus is trying to do, as you come to the book of Ephesians, and you see it throughout the book, because the whole book is about unity. The whole book is about unity. And he's saying, no. Stop. Stop focusing on yourself. That's not the way to be able to win. We win together. We fight together. We fight for one another. And here's the reality of it. The people around you need you to win. They need for you to win. And your spouse needs for you to win. Your kids need for you to win. Your friends need for you to win. Your coworkers need for you to win. The world around you needs to see the power and the beauty of Jesus Christ. They need for you to win. And the righteousness of Jesus Christ steps into our lives and says, you have the authority to stand back up. Not only do you have the authority to stand back up, but you don't have time to worry about what's behind. You don't have time to worry about what's in the past. And so Jesus' righteousness steps in and says, listen, this is who you are now. Stop looking in the rearview mirror. But the accuser wants to come in and he wants to talk to you constantly about the past. Look at what you did. Look at how you blew it. And he's constantly pulling you back into the past. But as I saw God extend that sword to me, very much what he was saying to me is this: stop it. We have a mission. We have somewhere to go. There's too much at stake for you to sit there wallowing in the mud about your past. People are going to hell. Get up and fight. We don't have time for that. What we're doing is too important for you to sit there worrying about the past. The reality is that if you're a follower of Jesus Christ, if you have given your allegiance to him, if you have sworn your allegiance to him, there's only two things in your rearview mirror. It's a cross and an empty tomb. There's only two things behind us. Jesus took all my shame and all my guilt. And he's taking yours too. There's only two things we see when we look back. So get up and fight. Some of you are wallowing in the mud. And you're allowing the things of your past to keep you from victory in the present. You're allowing the things of your past to keep you from victory in your present because you aren't trusting God about the righteousness that you've been given. And the accuser is keeping you down. It's time to get up. It's time to get up. The people around you need for you to win. And it's not just the people that you know. Because we fight a spiritual battle. And we fight it together as a family. Some of you are here and you're saying, it doesn't really matter whether or not I win. It's absolutely crucial that you win. It is essential that you win because we fight a spiritual battle together. I want you to look around this room. No, look around this room. You're still looking at me. The people in this room need you to win. I don't care if you know them or not. They need you to win. And we are dependent on one another to fight this battle together. And we need one another. We've got to get our eyes off ourselves, trust in the righteousness of Jesus Christ that we've been given to strengthen our hearts, protect our hearts, so that we can continue to get up and get up and get up and get up. One of the other things that Satan wants to do in your life when you begin that practice is that he wants to come in and he wants to convince you that the only way it's worth getting up is if you're never going to fall again. So he comes into your life and you say, no, I'm going to engage this battle again. And he brings to you, this is what's going to happen. I guarantee you this is going to happen. As soon as you begin to engage a battle that you've accepted defeat in, whether you're engaging a battle of jealousy or whether you're engaging a battle of your temper or whether you're engaging a battle of greed, whatever it may be in your life, as soon as you begin to engage a battle that you have accepted defeat in, you know what the first thing he's going to say to you is? You're not going to be able to win this battle for the rest of your life. What, you think you're never going to fall in this again? Because he wants to convince you that it's all or nothing. He wants to convince you that if you can't hold the hill for the rest of your life, then it's not worth holding it at all. That's foolishness. He wants to convince you that to give up all the battles if you can't win every single one. And you need to change your mindset to understand, no, listen, I may fall again. I may fall in a couple weeks, but I'm going to win today. And I may not win every single one of them, but I'm going to win more than I lose. I used to practice this a lot in my life. I don't do it as much anymore. I probably should, but I'm super hyper-competitive, and so I used to compete with myself. You guys know this about me. And so I used to compete with myself to say, how long can I hold the hill? And the accuser wants to step into my life and say, if you can't hold it forever, then you should just give it up today. Hey, listen, you're not going to be able to hold it forever. You might as well give in today. But to be able to stand firm and to say to him, you know what? I may not hold it forever, but I am going to hold it today. And I'm going to get better and better and better. And then I'd fall and I'd say, okay, let's see how long I can make it next time. I just want to stand firm a little bit longer than I did before. And God's righteousness gives me the ability to get up and get up and get up. And you know what I began to find? Victory. Victory. But you got to get up and fight. Not just get up for yourself, get up for the people around you. Stop wasting time worrying about the past. It's gone. Paul says he forgets about what's behind. Better pay attention to what's behind right there. He says, I forget about what's behind, and I press forward. Get up. For some of you, this is the first time that you've ever heard anything like this. You've been told your whole life that God's angry with you, that he's disappointed in you. Jesus Christ went to that cross to take all your sin and shame and to trade you for his righteousness. So that no matter who you are, no matter where you are, no matter where you've been, that you can get up. Get up. It's time to start winning. Will you pray with me? Father, I pray that today, as we look at this beautiful truth of your righteousness and how it's been given to us, this truth that Corinthians teaches us, that you made your Son who knew no sin to be sin on our behalf so that we might become the righteousness of God, so that we might receive your righteousness. Father, I pray that it would, in fact, infuse our heart with courage, that it would cause us, for some of us, maybe for the first time in a long time, to get up. That we would stand up, not based on our own goodness, not based on our own strength, not based on our own ability, but that we would stand up based on the righteousness that we have received from you. And that we would engage the battle. Because we understand we're on a mission. A mission to allow people to see the beauty of your love, the power of your grace. And Father, I pray that we would be a people who over and over and over and over again get back up. In Jesus' name.